Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion, commentary on today's economic and political events. And today, Tuesday, November 26th, 2013. And once again, thank you for joining us this afternoon. It's going to be a quiet week in trading, but let's go ahead and get right to the markets and see what is happening with gold today. Gold tried to keep it up today. It was above 12 December contracts, I believe I saw was at least 1250 earlier in the day. New York spot, we're looking at 1243, down $9 today. Silver is down 37 cents today at $19.94. Platinum down 13 at $1,378, and along with palladium down a dollar at $722. You had the USDX today trading lower, 0.24 at 80.65. And crude oil today was down a few cents, down a quarter at $93.83. And the paper markets today, the NASDAQ finally ended up over 4,000 for the first time in 13 years. Woohoo! Dow finishes around record closing high. I mean, really no change, 16,072. NASDAQ up 23 at 4017. You know, they had to get the NASDAQ up over 4,000 before the holiday. And, of course, they had to keep the S&P up 18. They have accomplished it. The Dow over 16, the NASDAQ over 4, and the S&P over 18. They accomplished it. So, you know, I'll send them a little gold star. 10-year yield today.
Will it be real gold?
Heck no, not.
I didn't think so.
Not to those.
I didn't think you were going to send them a real gold star. You're just going to send one of those paper gold stars.
Not to those creeps.
All right.
And 10-year yield today, basically unchanged at 2.70%. And I guess tomorrow there's going to be a lot of data released tomorrow. I don't know what it's going to do the markets, but you know, unless there's something really bad in those numbers tomorrow, I doubt if I expect the markets to be, you know, pretty good tomorrow, pretty much the same as today. And I had that list of reports, but
the dog ate it, huh?
The dog ate it. You have the Commerce Department releases durable goods at 8:30 for October. The Labor Department releases weekly jobless claims at 8:30. Freddie Mac releases mortgage rates at 10. Leading indicators for October is being released by the Conference Board at 10. You know, it's interesting. Now they even group in Europe's release of their economic data along with ours. Tomorrow you have Paris. Actually, they're going to choose which city is going to host the 2020 World's Fair. But you have Germany. The ECB releases a review of the euro area's financial stability. Brussels, the central bank of France. They're going to be talking about their economy. Madrid, some information being released about Madrid. So that's what's happening tomorrow. So make sure you folks tune in tomorrow. We'll bring you those numbers and see how the markets have been manipulated to reflect the numbers and what lies the numbers will be.
What about if we start making up our numbers?
No, I think so too. Gold is really 1700.
Yeah, that's a. I don't know if the government can make it up. Why can't we?
Why can't we?
Yeah, exactly. Free country.
We'll sell it at 17 and we'll buy it back at. Why couldn't we do that? We'll sell it at based on 17 spot and we'll buy it back based on 17 spot. If you have an equal flow of buy and sells.
It won't work that way though. You start selling it at 17, you're not going to get much. Start paying it at 17, you're going to get a lot. And then you're going to have to sell it at 12.50, which is not a formula. That's not buying low and selling high. We talk about that on the program from time to time, and that would not correspond to that formula for investing success.
It was a controlled and... Folks, as funds were here, ready to lock in the buys with the people that's selling the product, we could. Right.
It's a nice theory, Melody, but I think you better leave that. To the gangsters in Washington. I think they understand manipulating prices better than you and I do.
There might be a way. We'll see. We'll see. But anyway.
Yes, we have to say something now. What's next, Melody?
Well, you had something about minimum wage.
Minimum wage. Let's do the health care first, though. We'll get to the minimum wage in a moment. This is just Obama again. Obamacare, the New York Times. The headline is, New Pitch for Health Insurance. Mind your mom. Get insured. As the Obama administration's health overhaul sputters in its opening weeks, insurers and advocacy groups are pursuing a new strategy in the quest to get millions of young people to sign up for health insurance. They're appealing to their mothers, right? In one cheeky campaign, the American Association of Retired People is urging mothers to send e-cards to their children, reminding them to sign up. One e-card reads, quote, as a reward for signing up for health insurance, I'll defriend you on Facebook, unquote. Another group, Organizing for Action, is seeking to steer holiday conversations toward health care by encouraging parents to have the talk with their adult children. Yeah, again, the adult children. That means we're talking about basically senior citizens are being encouraged to talk to their children about how important it is to sign up for Obamacare, right? And the reason, of course, is that Obamacare is deeply dependent on the idea that they're going to get a bunch of kids to sign up for it. Because the only way they can even hope to hold costs down for senior citizens who really need health care is to compel a bunch of kids who don't need health care to buy it anyway. And what the kids are going to do is... The Obamacare program depends on the kids subsidizing the elderly and the adults. Now, what's interesting about this, Obamacare depends on persuading or forcing young people to sign up so that their premiums will subsidize the premiums paid by senior citizens. But kids, one, first of all, they think they're immortal and therefore they don't need health insurance. And two, kids are generally broke. Right? They don't have that much money, especially in this economy, and can't afford Obamacare. Now, the point then is if Obamacare is going to force kids to pay for health care, will Obamacare alienate a lot of young people who used to support the Democrats and cause them to support the Republicans? How many kids are down there? This is a little bit, I can remember during the Vietnam War, we had demonstrations. Now, the war is different from Obamacare, but there's at least a little bit of similarity. We had the draft during the Vietnam War. And we had kids who were saying, hell no, we won't go. Hell no, we won't go. They didn't want to be drafted. They didn't want to be forced. They didn't want to fight in some jungle out in Southeast Asia and maybe die there. They wanted no part of it. And most of all, they didn't want to be forced. And the demonstrations led to bombings and political unrest, and it was a powerful business, and it's probably the reason why today's military doesn't include a draft. They know that they start drafting people and forcing people who don't want to fight to get involved in a war, they're going to have riots on their hands. Well, here we have something similar today. We have something similar to the draft. It's not the same thing, but something similar where Obamacare is going to essentially threaten these kids and say, look, you got to spend some money to make these, to provide health care for the old people. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, ha, ha, ha. I don't think the kids are going to necessarily go for this. And I'm wondering how much resistance we're going to see in, among kids who are from 18 to, say, perhaps 30 years old. Are we going to see serious resistance there before this is all over, 18 to 25, whatever? Right. I think we might. Don't you think so?
No, because parents have to insure their children up until they're 26. So they only have to go get their own insurance after they're 26. Obamacare included parents have to cover their children until they're age 26. So basically they are adult children at 26. And 27.
I don't think I was an adult at age 26.
Well, we thought
I'm not convinced that I was an adult until I got into my 50s. I think when I finally got into my 50s, I think I began to be an adult. And then just a year or two later, I began to be a senior citizen. All right, but I had kind of an extended childhood that lasted for the first 50 years of my life, Melody. And I wonder, does 26 necessarily make you an adult?
Well, Obamacare thinks so.
Well, I still suspect that we're going to see some animosity.
But even at 26, even at 26. But the whole point, Al, that's one of the main reasons why they need this immigration bill to pass. They need those people on Obamacare.
Yeah, because they need them to pay for other people's premiums.
That's right. And they're talking about 11 million, and there's been many numbers released much higher than 11 million. Mm-hmm.
People have talked about 20 million illegal aliens. Some people have even talked about 30 million. I don't know what the number is, but when the government says there's 11 million, I don't believe that anymore. I believe that the unemployment rate is, what, 7.2% or whatever they say it is right now?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that.
You know, so, I mean, that's...
You know, somebody is being paid a lot of money who could make a fortune writing fiction, and instead they're just writing numbers for the government. We're losing some of our literary artistes are being lost to government employment. In any case, we'll watch and see, but I still think we are going to see a certain amount of alienation. This is going to cost young people who typically support the Democrats are going to begin to think twice about it when they say, wait a second.
But then again, you have many more older people than you do younger people. And you know what? Older people are just to the point where it's like, fine, my health insurance went up, you know, $150 a month. I will quit this and I'll just pay the stupid thing. I mean, that's... Well,
if it's $150
a
month...
A lot of bucks, yeah.
Well, it is and it isn't. You know, I mean, it's
an average. For someone on a limited income, absolutely it is.
Yeah, but in return for health care, if they think they need health care, you know, health insurance, an extra $150 a month is not necessarily, it's troubling, but it's not infuriating. What's infuriating is you see these people who watch their premiums.
Ask the guy that doesn't have $150.
They're angry.
Ask the guy who doesn't have $150 to pay for it. You know, he's strapped because we're going to be talking about minimum wage. You know, he's barely eking out a living. Everything is so expensive. We talk about the heating oil this year, this winter, is going to be higher than it has in the past. But heck no, there's no inflation in this country. Heck no. You know, prices are just high. It's not inflation. They're just high. People can't, you know, are having a hard time. And but yet there's still plenty of money in this country, you know, when you have people standing in line to pay, you know, big bucks for a little Apple phone. So there's still a lot of money.
There's money. I mean, it's like the Great Depression. Not everyone was unemployed. Some people got by just fine during the Great Depression, but a lot of people absolutely did not. And it certainly... It reduced everyone's income to some degree, but some people were unemployed. Other people were just marginally employed. They got by. Same thing's going on right now to some degree. There's money here, but there's a lot of people that don't have money. Again, if John Williams is correct that the real unemployment rate is in the neighborhood of 22%, then there's just incredible problems in this country. You know, we have people, they get food stamps, all right, to help them buy food. Those are substitutes for the bread lines, mm-hmm. for the soup kitchens that we've seen pictures of from the Great Depression. Instead of putting up, you know, setting up a bread line where you get free bread or a soup kitchen or whatever, stop and get something to eat and rest that was there for people who were unemployed, we now have food stamps. It's the same thing. It's evidence of the same kind of poverty that was apparent in the Great Depression. The difference is when someone comes up and they get food stamps with a plastic card, they have their food subsidies that are provided with a plastic card. You can't tell whether they're using a MasterCard, a Visa, or a food stamp card. Right? We don't see the evidence of people standing in line, which we would have seen during the Great Depression. We did see, you know, for those who were there during the Great Depression, you saw it. Here's a guy standing in line trying to get a free meal. Why? Because he doesn't have anything to eat. When you see those lines get longer and longer and start to circle the block, you begin to realize, oh my gosh, we've got a problem. With the food stamps, we don't see the problem. But the problem is still there. All right? It's a peculiar situation. It's as if we are stumbling into something like an invisible depression. It's happening if you care to look, but it's not easily seen. It's not as obvious as it was during the Great Depression. And I won't argue necessarily that we're in a depression right now, but I will argue that we are close enough where, you know, it's a reasonable possibility. I think we're down to, what have we got, 30, 25 seconds, Melody? Shall we just stop here and move along to commercial breaks, or shall we?
No, that's fine. And you know, it's true. You don't have the visual picture of the people, mm-hmm. and they attached a stigma to it. Like if you were, you know, we'll give you the credit card so you don't feel bad about yourself.
Oh, I get that.
And it's like people shouldn't feel bad. People need to look at to why they don't have a job and why it's difficult and why they can't afford the things that the, you know, are necessities that we need in life. Why?
The answer is government has taxed us into oblivion.
Yes.
That's the real reason, and we can talk more about that when we return.
Part of the illusion.
Part of the illusion. We'll talk more about the illusion and taxes and when we return after commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Got a special for them today, Melody?
Absolutely. We're going to continue the special $20 gold pieces. In fact, we have some Mint State 62 $20 Liberty gold pieces. You'll receive a 1 ounce free silver eagle along with free shipping for $1,400. And I'm going to reduce it. $1,400. And $50. We have very limited at that amount, $1,450. So you better call 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And just tell Carla about the special that I just announced on the radio. And
but tell her the truth about the special. Don't tell Carla that Melody said it was $1,425 or $1,375. You got to tell them the truth now. You understand?
All our listeners tell the truth. We have a wonderful, wonderful group of people that were we over the years. You know, Al, I talk about building relationships. And, you know, I've shared so many things with so many of my customers. And, you know, they become friends and almost, you know, family. And I'm so thankful and I've been so blessed to be placed in this position for whatever reason. And the reason being is I help people. They get great prices and great coins here at Discount Gold and Silver, but beyond business, it's been very special to work here. And again, I've been blessed, and I guess that's my early Thanksgiving day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that one of the great
and blessings. along with you and Frank and everybody else. So thank you.
Well, thank you. One of the great blessings of my life is that my dad was self-employed. and he had a little construction business, an excavation business, and built it up from nothing. Matter of fact, he had a Jeep and a wheelbarrow is where he started out when I was, you know, about the time I was born, and built it up to where he had a couple of dump trucks and a Caterpillar and a couple of backhoe mounted or tractor mounted backhoes and a crawler backhoe. We did excavation business. We put in sewer and water and dug basements and one thing or other like that. And it was hard work. And the old man was almost a monster when he was on the job. I mean, he would yell and scream at everybody, and you better not be standing around if there was something to be done. You understand? I mean, we ran on the job. When you finished operating the backhoe and it was time to go get some more stone in the dump truck, you had better not be walking from the backhoe to the dump truck. We ran from the backhoe to the dump truck, get in there, get down to the local stone quarry and pick up another load of stone, the rest of it. And it was, I loved it. I thought it was great. I loved it. But it taught me about working hard. And there have been times in my life when I faced problems that I didn't have brains enough to know how to solve. And the only way I got through them is I just worked, sometimes 100 hours a week. I worked my way through it just by dumb brute force, not intelligence, just dumb brute force and a kind of confidence that I could overcome if I worked hard enough. That is something that has stood me in good stead throughout my life, and it's the sort of thing that I don't think you can learn unless your folks are self-employed. And then you learn how to work. And where I'm going with this is...
I disagree.
You know,
I don't think parents have to be self-employed. I believe we come from a generation, my parents and my grandparents were working. They had hard lives, and they worked hard. And I believe this was passed on to generation. You were required to work hard, and that followed through. And they weren't self-employed, but the work ethic, the work hard... work your way out was there. So
I agree with that. But what I would say is that I got a better dose of the work ethic working for a parent who was self-employed than I would have had if he was merely a very hard worker working for someone else. I saw things from a different perspective. I saw it to a greater degree. And the point I'm trying to get to is there is such an enormous blessing mm-hmm. in being self-employed. There is something going on. It gives your life a different kind of meaning. It's not just a 9-to-5. There's a certain amount of risk. There's a certain amount of aggravation. And there's also a certain amount of pride and reward that's associated with being self-employed that I don't think you can find in most 9-to-5 jobs. It's a different world, different attitude. We need more people. I think, you know, we've talked about the difference between consumers and producers on the program here a couple of times, and it's an idea that's, you know, expanding. I think about it and I begin to see it more clearly. Producers are not just the super rich. In fact, most of them are nothing but consumers. They've found angles on how to bribe the government and how to make money, how to take money, how to get money, not make it, not earn it, but get it, right? Acquire it. And they are no better morally than a lot of people that are living on welfare. They are consumers at both ends of the spectrum, where you will find the main concentration of producers. And by that, I mean people who produce more than they consume. Fundamental evidence of that is their ability to save, to invest. If you got extra money, you're a producer. And I mean money that you've earned. Not that you've hustled, not that you've stolen, money that you've earned. You're a producer. The producers are in the middle class. And we've got the consumers at the top end who think they're entitled to anything they can see, and we've got more consumers at the bottom end who think they're entitled to have people give them money. And the producers are in the middle class, and the middle class has been shrinking. We're running out of those producers. We're running out of those people in small businesses. Huh? And why are we running out of them? We were going to talk about taxes and the problem we're facing with government. We mentioned that at the end of the first segment. A big part of the reason is because government, in their brilliance, continues to pass more and more regulations on businesses. And they apply regulations usually that might be designed and might even make a certain amount of sense for some multi-million-dollar, multi-billion-dollar corporation. They need regulation. But you can't apply the same regulations to some guy who's just trying to make a buck. He's got a pickup truck. He knows how to do some plumbing. He knows how to do some electrical work. And yet he can't do what he knows, at least not self-employed, because he doesn't know how to deal with paperwork imposed by government. And it's wrong. A lot of these regulations, one of the things I think we should have is whenever the government, federal government, passes any of these new regulations for regulating business, they should specifically exempt anyone who makes less than $500,000, maybe even $1 million a year. Just exempt them. You can regulate them at the state level if you want, but government regulations should only, federal regulations, they should only apply to businesses that make, who knows? You know, we can argue about the number, but say minimum $1 million a year gross. If you gross $1 million, fine, we'll give you some government regulation. But if you're doing less, just let the guy live his life and learn how to work hard. Teach his kids how to work hard. Give him a shot at the good life rather than high taxes, and that's what we get today. You don't get a shot at the American dream. You get a shot at the American tax system. That's where we are. And so, Melody, what do you think?
You feel better. You know, I understand things are different. Things are not what they once were. And there's a lot of things that would have to change, not just regulation. But, I mean, you are. We're being taxed to death. I mean, everything we make now is... Yeah, prices are continuing. Our policy, our monetary policy, has to be fixed. And when we talk about the gold standard or fiat currency, I mean, we're on a path, and it's not going to change.
No.
It's not going to change. The day of reckoning is coming.
Yep.
And I don't think anything can be fixed until that day of reckoning is here. Then we have a chance.
What will happen, and when we talk about the day of reckoning, we're not just talking about a time when someone comes up with a little ledger and say, okay, we've got assets on this side, we've got debits on this side, and we're going to just make a little calculation here and see how much wealth you really have. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a day when we run out of producers, when there's finally just not enough money to support all the consumers in this country. And when that happens, there is going to be hell to pay. There is going to be the equivalent. These consumers, you see them in some of the fictional movies. They're not far removed. Ethically, morally, they're not far removed from these films about zombies. All right? Sounds crazy. And yet that's what the zombies are. They're just pure consumers. They're comical. They're stupid. They're fictional. I get that. But still, they are pure consumers. They produce nothing. And they just wander around looking for somebody to feed off of. We're going to get to that moment there. And the only thing that's going to change is after we go through a brutal economic depression. Not just a little conversation, not just a little bit discomfort. We will go through a brutal economic depression. And in the midst of that that brutality, where in the school of hard knocks, when we are bumping heads with everybody else in the community, if they are consumers and you're a consumer, where are you going to find more food? Where are you going to find more clothing? Where are you going to find electrical energy? We are going to learn to appreciate the producers in this society. We are going to learn that we are dependent on the producers, and we better give them some slack. And by producers, again, I don't mean the super rich. Some of them are producers. I don't say they're all parasites, but most of them are, my opinion. They learned how to get money, but they don't even care about earning money. Just getting it. Yeah. So Melody was saying there's not going to be a solution. I agree with you 100%. There's not going to be a painless solution to the problem, because Mitt Romney pointed out that 47% of the people in this country are receiving some sort of subsidy from the federal government, or at least from government. I don't know if he just meant federal and state. Probably meant both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, half of us are getting a check from government. One way or another, we're getting a subsidy. And we aren't going to give that up. We're not going to give it up. And if you want to be elected as a politician, you've got to promise that you're going to give something for nothing to somebody. All right? If you're Republican, you give something for nothing to the rich. If you're a Democrat, you give something for nothing to the poor. The result is we've got half the country that has become parasites to greater or lesser degree. And they will not vote for a Republican who turns off their subsidies. And they won't vote for a Democrat who reduces their welfare. And the net result is we will just have more of it and more of it and more of it until we finally reach a point where we have so many consumers here in the consumer economy that we can't support them anymore. And we it breaks things down so badly that the consumers are forced to learn how to produce. And they will only make, they'll only get that education based on considerable pain. It won't be just casual. They're going to have the idea of entitlements is going to be beaten out of them. All right. And I mean the idea of government subsidies and government support. Government, I guarantee they're going to be, people are going to learn if you have to work for a buck an hour, you're going to take it and be glad to have it. Just to put a little bit of food on the table. And once we've gone through a decade of that kind of trauma, as the Soviet people, this former Soviet Union did after the Soviet Union collapsed, we'll be back on track. We will regain our appreciation for producers. It doesn't mean we'll lose all consumers. That won't ever happen. But we will have greater respect for the producers. We will understand that we must produce. We cannot just live on the basis of we're entitled to something somebody else makes. When that happens, then we'll see a change. But I don't believe it's going to come around again. I think you're right. There won't, the change will not be painless, and it won't happen merely by talking to people and saying, this is right, this is wrong, this is better, this is worse. As long as half the people are getting a subsidy, what's better than free money?
I'll tell you what, that other half is getting quarterly statements showing a Dow at 16,000, the S&P at 18, and the NASDAQ at 4. So even the other half is receiving great benefits from Ben Bernanke spending $85 billion a month.
That's exactly right.
So
And they're just as crazy in their own way as the black folk are, for example, who are receiving welfare. And if you try to cut the welfare, you're going to see riots.
No.
Right? Cut the welfare of the African-American community, you can anticipate there will be some riots. You cut the welfare to the white investors who are investing in the stock market. What we're talking about, if Bernanke even suggests he's going to start tapering, guess what? The white folk up there in the stock market are saying, we'll tear the whole stock market down. We'll force this thing and we'll make the whole thing collapse if we don't continue to get our $85 billion a month subsidy. And the point is, there's not too many of us left in this country who are not addicted to government support. It's happening at all over. It's happening across the spectrum. And we are in so deep that I don't see how we will easily stop except by force and violence and brutality. And people finally say, oh my gosh, we were so stupid to think we could live in a consumer-based economy. We have to have an economy based on production rather than consumption. The whole idea that we could have a consumer-based economy, it's insane, it's insane, it's insane. And yet that's what your government tells you. We have people who say, oh, we're entitled to welfare from government. And some of us would sit back and criticize them for believing that entitlement. But Americans have believed we're entitled to just buy, shop till we drop. We're the world's ultimate consumers. We were holding the world's economy together simply by buying all the world's trash. That's every bit as stupid as anybody who believes they're entitled to welfare. It was stupid. It's gone across the board. Day is coming. Day is coming when we will not be able to afford that stupidity. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
And it amazes me how that people cannot see through this. It's like, and I've been saying this for 20 years. I don't understand how people don't understand what's going on. And for those that do understand what's going on, why don't they get themselves protected? Why don't they make changes? And I know it's difficult. It's very difficult because you're actually going against the stream. You're going against the belief of your family, your friends. We've said this before in the program. Your family, your friends, your coworkers, they think you're insane. Yep. If you had mentioned something about, well, you know, maybe this isn't going to go on forever, and maybe those numbers. And what I find interesting now, if you know, I watch CNBC in the morning, you know, with a half an ear. Because half the things they say on there, you know, they just, you know, of course, are promoting the stock market. But you have to listen to what they say. They even come out with puzzlement and scratching their heads at points in time, wondering how this continues. And once they begin to taper, the market is going to crash. And there was an interview this morning. The guy says, this is an experiment. When Bernanke comes out and says or talks or even mentions or even implies that there might be a tapering, it's an experiment to see what the market will do.
Yeah.
It's a way to condition the market.
I'll find out.
So when they actually do make that first taper, you probably won't have a supreme drop in the stock market.
Well, they'll ease into it. It won't be as bad as everyone suspects. But I was talking about the tapering just from the perspective that it's part of something that's systemic in this country. It's not about blacks. It's not about whites. It's about greed.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody paid me $5, you know, every time I took a pail of water from the kitchen and hauled it into the bathroom and threw it down the toilet, I would probably move a lot of pails of water. It would be stupid, but as long as I was getting paid to move the pails of water from the kitchen to the bathroom, dump it down the toilet, it was stupid. But just the same, I'm being paid. It is human nature if you're getting the money. you'll do stupid things. And that's what's happened. We've been more than happy to do stupid things as long as someone would pay us to play the fool. And the problem we are facing is it appears that we're approaching a moment when they will no longer be able to pay us to play the fool. Now what are we going to do? And if we've played the fool for years or even decades, how do you teach people who've been playing the fool for the past 20, 30, 40 years, how do you teach them to do something that's sensible and rational? You know, they're running around with those little funny hats with the bells on the corners of them, the rest of the fool that you used to have in the courts of the kings and the old monarchies and the rest of that. They were just their local comedians. What happens when nobody will pay you to be a comedian anymore? Yeah. You actually have to go make a productive contribution. And comedy won't get it done. So it's going to be a learning experience for a lot of people, and it will not be painless. What else we got, Melody?
Well, we were going to talk about minimum wage.
Article from the New York Times. Headline is, Conservative Leads Effort to Raise Minimum Wage in California. Ron Unz, a Silicon Valley millionaire, rose to fame by promoting ballot initiative that essentially eliminated bilingual education in California. He went on to become publisher of the American Conservative, a libertarian-leaning magazine. In other words, the man has his credentials are on the right side of the political spectrum. All right, so Republican, essentially a Republican. I don't know that he'd agree with that, but he's on the right end of the political spectrum. It goes on and says, but after decades in the conservative movement, Mr. Unz is pursuing a goal that's stymied liberals, raising the minimum wage. He plans to pour his own money. Now there's an amateur politician. He's spending his own money. Nobody does that in politics.
Bloomberg
I admire
does.
Him. I admire him for doing it, but it's, it's
Bloomberg tough. Does.
Yeah, I agree. There are a few that do that, but it's unusual. He plans to pour his own money into a ballot measure to increase the minimum wage in California to $10 an hour in 2015 and $12 an hour in 2016, which would make it by far the highest in the nation. Currently, the California minimum wage is $8, 75 cents higher than the federal minimum. Now, is it a good idea to raise the minimum wage? And the reason I ask that is because it's a terrible idea typically for the lower classes. They can't get a job. What do you do with a guy? We're going to raise the minimum wage to, all right, $12 an hour in California. All right, great. Sounds like a wonderful idea, but I guarantee you what it means is that fewer and fewer people are going to have jobs in California. Mm-hmm. The boss is going to look at it and say, I can't afford to pay $12 an hour for some guy who doesn't know how to run a broom. I can't afford to hire him. You're going to have a certain amount of credentials and background and the rest of that sort of thing. And it will, in fact, almost certainly put the poor people deeper down. It wasn't going to help them. It's like, oh, the poor are going to make more money. No, they're not. On average, they're going to be more unemployed. That's what's going to follow from this. And the article continues, and it says, using what he sees as conservative principles to advocate a policy long championed by the left, Mr. Unz argues that significantly raising the minimum wage would help to curb government spending on social services. What he's saying is we'd have less people on welfare, and therefore the government wouldn't have to spend so much on welfare to support people who are unemployed. And he says, it goes on, it would strengthen the economy, I think that's debatable, and make more jobs attractive to American-born workers. Now, there, I think, is his point. By raising the minimum wage to, say, $12 an hour, he is going to put a bunch of illegal aliens out of work. And this may be his motive. He doesn't say that, of course, in the article, and I don't know if he says it anyway. But if we are going to raise the minimum wage in California, where we have a high concentration of illegal aliens, we can't afford to hire some guy who doesn't even speak English for $12 an hour. We could afford to hire him for $5 an hour. All right? We can get enough work out of them, and we can communicate and point, you know, do this, do that, whatever. All right, we can get enough work out of them for $5 an hour where we can afford to hire them. For $12 an hour, we cannot. The net result is it'll be more difficult for illegal aliens to find jobs in California, and they will either leave California to move to another state, or they'll leave California to go back to Mexico. And this may be what Mr. Unz has in mind. He's saying that when we make more jobs attractive to American-born workers, he's playing on the idea that was used to justify illegal aliens back a few years ago, 6-8 years ago. They said, these guys coming up from Mexico are taking the jobs that Americans don't want. That's all. They're not taking the good jobs. They're just taking the jobs we don't want. And the truth is they never took the jobs we don't want. They took the wages we don't want. We didn't need illegal aliens in this country for a couple hundred years. Not really. All right, there's some exceptions. They refused to pick farm products and the rest of that, and then they went home. I get that. But by and large, Americans did what had to be done, and we were paid to do it. We were not dependent on bringing some foreigners in here to do the unpleasant jobs like rotting out a sewer, emptying a septic tank. We got the job done. There are Americans who do it if the wages are right. But what we've done is cut wages. And in doing so, Americans who've already got a home worth $250,000, they have a certain amount of money they've got to come up with every single month to make the mortgage payment. They've got a car they paid $25,000, $30,000 for. They've got to have a certain amount of money. They can't work for $5 an hour. So we let the illegal aliens come in and do some of these jobs at wages that Americans can't afford to accept or we haven't been able to in the past. Mr. Unz argues that by raising the minimum wage, a lot of Americans will be attracted to jobs that they wouldn't have looked at for $5 an hour, and at the same time will probably cause illegal aliens, it'll increase the pressure on illegal aliens to go home. What do you think, Melody? Minimum wage, good or bad?
It really is bad. I don't think it does how they promote the minimum wage. They use it as a, usually a political agenda.
Humanitarian gesture.
Yeah.
We're going to help people. No, you're not. You're going to put them out of jobs.
Yeah. And I saw a report that about 60% of the folks that are officially poor don't work. And you're right, because you mentioned this when you were talking about this. When you raise the minimum wage, it makes them harder for them to get a job if they want one. Because you have to have value in an employee. You have to have value to the company that they're working for, and you're right.
It has to be proportional to the wage you pay. All right, there's some people that aren't worth more than $1 an hour. Huh? You can't afford to pay somebody who's only worth $1 an hour. You can't afford to pay them $12 an hour. You can't do it. It's bad business. It can't be done. But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't hire the guy who's only worth $1 an hour. And the reason is this. I talked earlier in the program about what I believe the importance of being raised by parents, father, who was self-employed. It made a big difference in my mindset on a number of different. All right. He taught me how to work hard. Now, if you let some guy take a job, he doesn't know how to work. He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't understand any of it. But if you can hire him for $1 an hour, and I'm not recommending, I'm just using that number just to make my point. But you hire him for $1 an hour, guess what? If he gets support from his family and his friends, by the time he's been there for 6 months, this guy may begin to learn something about what it means to work hard. And when he begins to grasp that, it's kind of like an earn while you learn program. And what are you learning? You're learning a work ethic. Yeah, you're only getting paid $1 an hour. But if you're any good and you grab onto the idea and you get some encouragement from your family and your friends, it's yes, yes, hang on to the job. They're teaching you something. You have an opportunity to learn. All of a sudden you become a man who's no longer worth $1 an hour. You might be worth $5 an hour. You might be worth $20 an hour. It depends on the effort you're willing to make and how much intelligence, how much education you've got. You can advance, but you're not going to advance if you don't get the job in the first place. And if you can't qualify, if you can't earn $12 an hour, and really probably you have to, for a man to hire you for $12 an hour, you've probably got to make $25 an hour in order to generate a profit for your employer. You know, so this minimum wage is, it seems like a good idea, but in the end, it's a bad situation. For what it's worth, first job I had back when I was a kid, and I remember this. I worked for my dad from time to time on weekends, one thing another, just as a kid. But the first job I had working for somebody else was for Blau Motors back in Crystal Lake, Illinois, and they paid me 85 cents an hour after school to go sweep up. He had a garage and tire repair place. And they paid me 85 cents an hour. Now, a lot of people say, 85 cents an hour? Jeez, that's just nothing. Why would you even show up? Well, back then, we're talking about 1960, thereabouts. 85 cents was 85% of a silver dollar. If I worked for 2 hours after school sweeping up and cleaning up, I made almost two silver dollars. Today, that's 40 bucks. Huh? 85 cents an hour was not a triviality back then. And it helped you to learn things. You know, it gave you exposure. It was cheap. Yeah, it was cheap. It was little, but it really, under that monetary system, under the, back then the dollar was still backed by silver, it wasn't such a bad deal. It's got to be made available to people today. There's got to be a way to get people to work. They've got to have jobs. Otherwise, what are they going to do? When are they going to learn to work? If we can't, you know, if we're going to have minimum wage of 12 bucks, how are we going to teach these kids that are growing up in single-parent families, for example? How are we going to teach them how to work? And most people think all you got to do is, well, just go to college and you'll get a job. Not necessarily.
Not anymore.
Even if you do, it won't make a lot of difference unless you have some sort of a work ethic that's pretty strong. And if you don't have it, you're not going anywhere. Where are you going to teach that right now? You know, except maybe by lowering the minimum wage and letting people get started and begin to learn what's going on. They won't all succeed, I know that, but some of them may, and some of them will.
We're spoiled, aren't we?
Well,
we're a nation of...
And yep. Foolish. We've been foolish, and there's going to be a price to be paid for it. We can't play the fool forever. We're out of time, Melody.
All right.
Mañana, day before Thanksgiving. Hope you folks will tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye. Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. Money, money, always funny.